32,000 Barbie dolls. Photographer Chris Jordan plays with Barbie dolls. In February 2008, Jordan showed the TED audience a photograph he had taken with about 50 Barbie dolls placed in circular patterns. Jordan advanced to a second photograph, a larger view of the first, that showed many thousands of Barbie dolls. If you didn't know they were Barbie dolls, you would think the photo was of a beautiful floral painting. The third and final photograph of the series pulled out even further and revealed a silhouette of a woman's breasts. And here's what Jordan said. As you get all the way back, you see 32,000 Barbie dolls, which represents the number of breast augmentation surgeries performed in the U.S. each month. The vast majority of those are on women under the age of 21. It's rapidly becoming the most popular high school graduation gift given to young girls about to go off to college. Jordan is another master of packaging data in visually appealing ways. In another art piece, Jordan wanted to visualize the number of people who die each year from cigarette smoking. The first photograph showed a close-up of cigarette boxes stacked on top of one another. As Jordan pulled back, the next photographs revealed the big picture. He had recreated Vincent van Gogh's 1886 masterpiece, Skull of a Skeleton with a Burning Cigarette, with thousands of cigarette packets. Jordan believes that it's difficult for the average person to make meaning out of enormous statistics, yet these statistics reveal some very troubling issues in our society, issues that can evoke a more visceral response from people when visually and creatively presented. Very much in the way Bono gets a rise out of data, Jordan believes that by feeling big numbers, we can do something about it. He said, "I have this fear that we're not feeling enough as a culture right now. There's this kind of anesthesia in America. We've lost our sense of outrage, our anger, and our grief about what's going on in our culture right now, what's going on in our country, the atrocities that are being committed in our names around the world. They've gone missing. These feelings have gone missing." Jordan's presentation is a profound example of transforming dry statistics, some of which we've all heard numerous times, and adding a multimedia element in the form of visuals to bring the data alive. The visuals reinforce each point and help us to feel the emotion behind the numbers. The great poet Maya Angelou once said, "People will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." Don't think just about what you want people to know. Think about how you want them to feel. How LinkedIn simplified its marketing PowerPoint. 9 months before LinkedIn went public, its vice president of marketing at the time invited me to give a workshop to 130 of his sales and marketing staff. He wasn't happy with his team's existing PowerPoint slides. It overcomplicated things, he said. The executive encouraged his team to incorporate some of the concepts from my previous books into a new and more compelling slide deck to encourage enterprise-level customers to advertise and to begin recruiting on LinkedIn. They tossed out the existing PowerPoint deck entirely and transitioned to more TED-like slides with little text, no bullet points, and plenty of photographs and visuals. If a statistic needed to be highlighted, the data point was the only number on the slide, and it was accompanied by a photograph of the LinkedIn site or some other relevant image. One key idea that I stressed with the team was the need to paint a picture for their audience with the images they show and the words they use to describe the slide. For example, the most important slide of the deck at that time had one statistic on it, 70 million. It was accompanied by an artist's rendering of the LinkedIn logo made up of people representing LinkedIn members. The statistic represented the number of LinkedIn members at the time. Today it's well over 200 million. The narrative we worked on went something like this. Today LinkedIn has 70 million members, and we're adding 3 million more every month. That's the equivalent of adding the population of San Francisco to your network every 30 days. LinkedIn's marketing and sales professionals loved the new design, and they went on to use the deck for the next 9 months ahead of their stunning IPO. CEOs and sales and marketing executives for many of the world's most admired brands are tossing out their old PowerPoint presentations and replacing them with ones that take their audiences on a visual journey. The old adage, you wouldn't bring a sword to a gunfight, fits quite nicely here. The old style of PowerPoint is an anachronism on the modern corporate battlefield. Don't let your competitors kill your dreams because you have failed to keep up with the times. 10 note. Visualize content. Add images or include background pictures to pie charts, tables, and graphs. I recommend striving for no more than 40 words in the first 10 slides. This will force you to think creatively about telling a memorable and engaging story, instead of filling the slide with needless and distracting text. Kill bullet points on most of your slides. The most popular TED presenters deliver slides with no bullet points. Text and bullet points are the least memorable way of transferring information to your audience. You might not be able to achieve this goal with every slide, but it's a good exercise. Once you force yourself to eliminate wordy slides, you'll realize just how much more fun you can have with your presentation. The best part, your audience will love it. Hear it. While vision is our predominant sense, we recall information much better when multiple senses are stimulated at the same time. Our auditory sense is very powerful. How you say something, pitch, rate, volume, intensity, articulation, all of that can touch your listener's soul. 150 feet down an illegal mine shaft. For more than 25 years, Lisa Christine has traveled the most hidden parts of the world to capture the beauty and to expose the hardships of indigenous peoples. Let's revisit her TEDx talk to focus on how she used her words to reach her audience. The audience sat silent, transfixed, as Christine took them on a visual journey with photographs as their guide. The first 2 minutes of Christine's talk is the most gripping opener I've ever seen in a presentation. There's no text on the slides, as we've discussed, just photographs. There's a compelling narrative and a carefully crafted delivery. Although her photographs tapped into her audience's visual sense, it was how she used her voice that sealed the deal. The impact you can make by stimulating your listener's auditory sense can be just as powerful as using visuals. Painting pictures with words. Christine's presentation was extraordinary because the power of her words matched her show-stopping photographs. Listen to Christine's evocative description of her visit to brick kilns in India.
"This strange and awesome sight was like walking into ancient Egypt or Dante's Inferno. Enveloped in temperatures of 130 degrees, men, women, children, entire families, in fact, were cloaked in a heavy blanket of dust, while mechanically stacking bricks on their head, up to 18 at a time, and carrying them from the scorching kilns to trucks hundreds of yards away. Deadened by monotony and exhaustion, they work silently, doing this task over and over for 16 or 17 hours a day. There were no breaks for food, no water breaks, and the severe dehydration made urinating pretty much inconsequential. So pervasive was the heat and the dust that my camera became too hot to even touch and ceased working. Every 20 minutes, I'd have to run back to our cruiser to clean out my gear and run it under an air conditioner to revive it. And as I sat there, I thought, my camera is getting far better treatment than these people."
Christine is doing something Dr. Pascal Michelon calls creating a visual imprint on a person's mind. Neuroscientists have found that the visual cortex of your brain cannot tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. If you can think of something vividly, really imagine it, the same areas are activated as if you were actually seeing the event. That's why metaphors, analogies, and rich imagery are powerful ways to paint a picture in a mind's eye. In some cases, even more effective than an actual image. To boost your memory, transform verbal information to visual information as much as possible, according to Michelon. You can do it with visual aids or how you talk, the examples you use to paint pictures in someone's head. Pascal recommends that communicators use concrete examples as much as possible. Simply put, the brain is not designed to grasp abstractions. Even in sales pitches, use concrete examples to put your clients in a situation they can picture with their mind's eye. This is much more effective than using abstract words to describe your sales strategy. Painting a mental picture with no pictures at all. The brain can't tell the difference between what it actually sees and what it imagines. Janine Shepherd, the injured cross-country skier we talked about in Chapter 3, painted a picture for her TEDx audience and did not show a single slide or photograph to do it. As she tells the story, Shepherd was a member of the Australian ski team, preparing for the Winter Olympics, when she took a bike ride that changed her life. By using evocative and descriptive words, she took her audience along on that bike path.
As we made our way up towards the spectacular Blue Mountains of West Sydney, it was the perfect autumn day. Sunshine, the smell of eucalyptus, and a dream. Life was good. We'd been on our bikes for around 5.5 hours when we got to the part of the ride that I loved, and that was the hills, because I loved the hills. And I got up off the seat of my bike, and I started pumping my legs, and as I sucked in the cold mountain air, I could feel it burning my lungs, and I looked up to see the sun shining in my face, and then everything went black.
A utility truck had hit Shepherd. She was badly injured, airlifted to a spinal unit in Sydney, and was rendered a partial paraplegic. In the rest of her presentation, she talked about the long road to recovery, connecting her narrative to the theme, her theme being, you are not your body. Determined to prove her doctors wrong, Shepherd found a new dream to pursue, flying. She earned a pilot's license within 1 year of the accident and eventually became an aerobatics flying instructor. Shepherd's presentation has been viewed more than 1 million times. She's received emails from people who are inspired to keep fighting through their own setbacks. One person who emailed Shepherd said the video saved her life. The person had been fighting an ailment for 19 years. The person wrote, "It has become so bad that for the past few weeks, I am contemplating suicide. But today, after seeing and listening to Janine, I got a new ray of hope. My journey begins now." Imagine a songwriter has a way with words. The auditory sense can be stimulated by the rhetorical devices you use to deliver your words. For example, Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech is one of the most famous and quoted speeches in contemporary history. King did not use PowerPoint, Prezi, or Apple Keynote. Instead, he painted images with his words, images that have stuck with us for half a century. King used a public speaking device called anaphora, repeating the same word or words at the beginning of successive sentences. "I have a dream" is repeated in 8 successive sentences. In addition to the charts, animation, and photographs in his presentation, U2's Bono also used anaphora very effectively to add more stimulation to the senses. Here are 2 examples. The first one. Facts, like people, want to be free. And when they're free, liberty is around the corner, even for the poorest of the poor. Facts that can challenge cynicism and apathy that leads to inertia. Facts that tell us what's working and what's not so we can fix it. Facts that, if we hear them and heed them, could meet the challenge that Nelson Mandela made in 2005 when he asked us to be that great generation that overcomes the most awful expense to humanity, extreme poverty. Here's the second example. "I'm thinking of Whale Gonim. He set up one of the Facebook groups behind Tahrir Square in Cairo. He got thrown in jail for it. I have his words tattooed on my brain. We are going to win because we don't understand politics. We are going to win because we don't play their dirty games. We are going to win because we don't have a party political agenda. We are going to win because the tears that come from our eyes actually come from our hearts. We are going to win because we dream dreams and we are willing to stand up for those dreams. Whale is right. We are going to win if we stand up as one because the power of the people is so much stronger than the people in power. It's important to note that when he delivered the last paragraph I just read, Bono did not show any slides. He wanted the audience to focus on the auditory sense, his words. Tears filled Bono's eyes as he spoke, reflecting his deep emotional attachment to the words. Powerful, well-crafted words have a way of stirring deep emotions in all of us. A slide would have detracted from the moment. Bono received thunderous applause and a standing ovation from the TED audience. It's no wonder. He aroused their senses with his words. Three people and a computer amplify one man's voice. In March 2011, film critic Roger Ebert, who had lost his voice to cancer and eventually his life in April of 2013, spoke to a TED audience of more than 1,000 people. He said, "These are my words, but this is not my voice. This is Alex, the best computer voice I've ever been able to find, which comes as standard equipment on every Macintosh." The audience heard those words from a digitized voice as Ebert sat in a chair with a Mac on his lap. As a film critic with decades of experience in front of the camera, as well as deep knowledge of the craft of movie making, Ebert knew how difficult it is to hold an audience's attention, and so he came prepared with a trick up his sleeve, a multisensory auditory experience. The audience had been listening to Ebert speak through the digitized voice for about 1 minute, when he said, "I have found that listening to a computer voice for any great length of time can be monotonous, so I've decided to recruit some of my TED friends to read my words aloud for me." Three others shared the stage with Ebert, and they all sat in chairs alongside him. They included his wife, Chaz, Dean Ornish, and John Hunter. It's a very moving 18 minutes, especially as it shows the deep love and affection between Ebert and his wife. The story of how Ebert remade his voice is interesting, but Ebert was absolutely right. Listening to a digitized voice for 18 minutes would get monotonous, so he chose not one but four others, including the computer, to speak for him. Multisensory includes multiple voices. I find it ironic that Ebert said listening to a digitized voice is monotonous, since many speakers speak in a monotone and are far less animated than Ebert's computer-generated voice. In Chapter 7, I said an 18 or 20-minute presentation always trumps a 60-minute one. The majority of my keynote speeches last about an hour, so am I being hypocritical? Not at all. Like Ebert did, I share the stage. In my presentations, I introduce multiple voices, often through video clips of inspiring leaders. Video gives me the opportunity to engage two senses at once, visual and auditory. Feel it. The holy grail of a presentation is to transport the audience to another place. The visual display of information helps them to see it, but if the audience cannot physically touch something, how do we complete that journey? Again, think about a presentation as a Broadway play. An award-winning play has a wonderful story, intriguing characters, and relevant props. Great presentations have each of those elements, including simple props that give the audience a feel for what it's like to be in the scene. A musician gets a standing ovation without playing a note. You might recall punk rocker Amanda Palmer from Chapter 3. I mentioned that Palmer's TED 2013 video received more than 1 million views within 1 week of being posted online. Palmer's theme was simple and straightforward. Don't make people pay for music. Since digital content is already available and shareable, Palmer suggests artists should ask for support directly from their fans. Most of the people who watch your presentation probably never have experienced life on the streets as a struggling musician, but Palmer takes them there. Without saying a word, Palmer walked on stage and placed a milk crate on the floor. She stepped on the crate, draped a veil across her left arm, and held out a flower in her right hand. She slowly took in two deep breaths, posed motionless for several seconds, and spoke.
So, I didn't always make my living from music. For about 5 years after graduating from an upstanding liberal arts university, this was my day job. I was a self-employed living statue called the 8-foot bride, and I love telling people I did this for a job because everybody always wants to know, who are these freaks in real life? Hello? I painted myself white one day, stood on a box, put a hat or a can at my feet, and when someone came by and dropped in money, I handed them a flower and some intense eye contact. And if they didn't take the flower, I threw in a gesture of sadness and longing as they walked away.
Palmer delivered the first 3 minutes of her presentation while standing on the crate, reliving her experiences and the people who gave her money.
I had no idea how perfect a real education I was getting for the music business on this box.
Eventually, her band did earn enough money and she quit being a street performer. As soon as Palmer told the audience that she had quit being that statue, she walked off the box. So the box remains on stage as Palmer delivers the rest of her presentation, its presence acting as a metaphor for her narrative.
I decide I'm just going to give away my music for free online whenever possible. I'm going to encourage downloading, sharing, but I'm going to ask for help because I saw it work on the street. My music career has been spent trying to encounter people on the internet the way I could on the box, so blogging and tweeting, not just about my tour dates and my new video, but about our work and our art and our fears and our hangovers, our mistakes, and how we see each other. And I think when we really see each other, we want to help each other.
Palmer concluded her presentation with this challenge.
I think people have been obsessed with the wrong question, which is, how do we make people pay for music? What if we started asking, how do you let people pay for music?
As she said thank you, Palmer pulled out the flower that she had used to open her presentation. She extended the flower to her listeners with an outstretched hand and threw it into the audience. The audience jumped to its feet for a sustained 15-second standing ovation. Palmer, the musician, had given the performance of her life and hadn't played a note. The TED.com page where Palmer's video had been posted received more than 500 comments in 1 week. A woman named Jody Murray commented, "I'm disappointed in my own skeptical inner voice, wanting to dislike this talk. But in the end, it was not possible to. Amazing presentation, an example of such beautiful ideas realized." Can you recall ever seeing an amazing business presentation with beautifully realized ideas? They don't happen very often in corporate boardrooms, do they? Yet Amanda Palmer was delivering a business case for giving songs away for free, a very controversial subject in the music industry. And she did it in a way that her listeners could really feel and experience it. Feeling the pain of slow downloads. Palmer stood on a prop, a milk crate, to help people feel the pain of being a struggling musician. Props and demonstrations are very useful multisensory tools to help the audience tangibly grasp your idea and the problem it solves. For example, I worked with tech company executives to introduce an extremely fast USB drive for computers. The product had a technical read-write speed of 190 over 170 megabytes per second. Now, that description itself is not very interesting and it's not very tactile in any way. Yet in a simple demo, we found a way to get the audience to feel their current pain and to contrast that pain with the joy they'd feel by using the new product. After a brief introduction and an explanation of the product, the speaker walked to stage left, where a laptop computer was sitting on a chest-high table. He pulled the new product, a USB drive, from his pocket, plugged it into the computer, and handed a stopwatch to someone in the audience. He asked the audience member to start the clock as he moved a 1.5 gigabyte movie file from the computer to the USB drive. The total time that elapsed was 10.5 seconds. He then asked the audience member to start the clock again, and this time, as he transferred the file, he used a competitor's product. Without saying a word, the executive and the audience watched as the transfer happened. They waited and waited and waited. More than 40 seconds later, the transfer was complete. The speaker concluded, "Not all USB drives are created equal." If this particular executive had talked through that demonstration, time would have gone faster for the people in the audience. Instead, he was silent, which drew out the pain of slow downloads. The feather and the blowtorch. I'm a pediatrician and an anesthesiologist, so I put children to sleep for a living. And I'm an academic, so I put audiences to sleep for free. That's how Dr. Elliot Crane, who runs the pain management service at Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford, opened his TED presentation in 2011. Pain is usually a symptom of something wrong. But for some children, the pain never goes away, and it becomes the disease. Crane explained that before he would show the TED audience how this type of pain happens and how it's treated, he wanted to show them how it feels.
Imagine that I'm stroking your arm with this feather. Now, I want you to imagine that I'm stroking it with this blowtorch. What does it have to do with chronic pain? Imagine what your life would be like if I were to stroke it with this feather, but your brain was telling you that this blowtorch is what you were feeling. That is my experience with patients with chronic pain. Imagine something even worse. Imagine I was stroking your child's arm with this feather, and your brain was telling them they were feeling this hot torch.
The kinesthetic sense, touch, is sometimes difficult to incorporate into a presentation if the topic is about an idea, or in Crane's case, a medical condition, instead of a physical product. But as Crane demonstrates, it can be done with a little imagination. Once he put down the blowtorch, Crane transitioned to the visual sense, and he showed a photograph of one of his patients, a 16-year-old aspiring dancer who had sprained her wrist, and after it healed, she continued to live with excruciating pain in the injured arm. Chandler had allodynia. It's a medical condition whereby the slightest touch causes indescribable burning pain. Medical conferences are infamous for having some of the dullest presentations of any event. And it's not just my opinion. Ask any doctor. They'll tell you. The majority of presentations are boring and poorly prepared. I know. I work with many doctors and executives who run pharmaceuticals and medical device companies and healthcare organizations. Interestingly, but not surprising, if you do a Google search for how to give a better medical presentation, the first link it takes you to is TED. The bottom line is this. People remember information more vividly when more than one sense is stimulated. The next time you design a presentation, be imaginative about touching the five senses through the stories you tell, auditory, the photographs or slides you show, visual, and the props you use, feel. Not what you would expect from a Blue Tiffany gift box. Stacey Kramer survived a cancerous brain tumor. An average speaker would have started her presentation with that revelation. Instead, Kramer took a more imaginative, multisensory approach to her topic. The audience saw a photo of a beautifully wrapped Tiffany blue box, and Kramer said,
"Imagine, if you will, a gift. I'd like for you to picture it in your mind. It's not too big, about the size of a golf ball. So envision what it looks like all wrapped up. But before I show you what's inside, I will tell you, it's going to do incredible things for you. It will bring all of your family together. You will feel loved and appreciated like never before, and reconnect with friends and acquaintances you haven't heard from in years. Adoration and admiration will overwhelm you. It will recalibrate what's most important in your life.
Kramer drew out the story of the gift before revealing the startling conclusion.
By now I know you're dying to know what it is and where you can get one. Does Amazon carry it? Does it have the Apple logo on it? Is there a waiting list? Not likely. This gift came to me about 5 months ago. It looked more like this when it was all wrapped up. Not quite so pretty. This photo of a red plastic bag with the word biohazard written on it. And this. And then this. Photos of the x-ray showing my tumor and the long scar on the back of my head where the doctors had removed it. It was a rare gem. A brain tumor. Hemangioblastoma. The gift that keeps on giving.
The contrast between the lovely Tiffany box at the beginning of Kramer's presentation and the unpleasant photos at the end create a striking sensory experience for Kramer's audience. Kramer ended her presentation with a positive message and a lesson from the event that nearly took her life.
And while I'm okay now, I wouldn't wish this gift for you. I'm not sure you'd want it, but I wouldn't change my experience. It profoundly altered my life in ways I didn't expect, in all the ways I just shared with you. So the next time you're faced with something that's unexpected, unwanted, and uncertain, consider that it just may be a gift.
Secret number 8. Paint a mental picture with multisensory experiences. What Kramer did took courage. And that's why you don't see great presentations every day. It takes courage to make your story so simple a seventh grader can understand it. It takes courage to build a slide with one word on it, as Bono did. It takes courage to show photographs instead of filling your slides with bullet points and text. It takes courage to pull out a feather and a blowtorch, as Dr. Crane did, without feeling silly. Metaphorically, it takes courage to stand on a milk crate for 3 minutes as Amanda Palmer did. Courage stands out. Courage gets noticed. Courage wins hearts and minds. Courage is what you need to deliver the talk of your life. I know you have courage. Find it, celebrate it, revel in it. Courageous public speaking will transform your life and the lives of the people who listen to you. You have ideas that were meant to be seen, felt, and heard. Use your voice to astonish people, inspire them, and to change the world. Chapter 9. Stay in Your Lane. I don't think of work as work and play as play. It's all living. Sir Richard Branson. In December 2010, Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg was waiting offstage to address a TED audience. She said, "The day before, I had dropped my daughter off at preschool and told her I was flying off to the East Coast, so I wouldn't see her that night. She clung to my leg and begged me not to leave. I couldn't shake that image and, at the last minute, asked Pat if I should add it to my speech." "Absolutely, tell that story," said Pat. She was referring to the Paley Center CEO. Sandberg realized that she could help other women only by being honest about her own challenges and feelings. She said, "I took a deep breath and stepped on stage. I tried to be authentic and shared my truth. I announced to the room, and basically everyone on the internet, that I fall very short of doing it all. It felt really good not just to admit this to myself, but to share it with others." Secret number 9, stay in your lane. Be authentic, open, and transparent. Why it works. Most people can spot a phony. If you try to be something or someone you're not, you'll fail to gain the trust of your audience. Public speaking is considered an art form. I hope this book has demonstrated that the artful element of persuasion is backed by credible science. Now I would like you to set aside the techniques and the science and speak from the heart. That's right, everything we have just discussed will be meaningless if you're putting on an act. You can learn from others and how they achieve success in public speaking, but you'll never make a lasting impression on people unless you leave your own mark. I remember listening to Oprah Winfrey. She responded to a young woman in the audience who had said that she wanted to be the next Oprah. "No, you don't," Oprah said. Oprah explained that people should identify what lane they should be in and try to stay in that lane. She said that successful people identify their life's core purpose and relentlessly follow that purpose to become the best representation of themselves that they can become. It takes courage to stay in your lane. As Dr. Jill was crafting her now famous Stroke of Insight presentation, she had a decision to make. Although the first 12 minutes of her presentation were engrossing, there was nothing vulnerable or personal about it. Dr. Jill actually told me she needed a conclusion that, quote, would bust it out to the universe. 1 week before her TED Talk, Dr. Jill's best friend told her the presentation didn't work. "Jill," she said, "you take us to this incredibly vulnerable space, and you take us on this journey. We go with you. We're wide open. We're all yours. And then you're going to teach us about a stroke? You should hold the space." Holding the space meant being vulnerable, expressing the raw emotion of the stroke and what it taught her. Dr. Jill got the message and changed the conclusion of her presentation just 1 week before the TED conference. Here is how she ended the presentation.
"My spirit soared free, like a great whale gliding through the sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana. I found nirvana. And if I have found nirvana and I'm still alive, then everyone who is alive can find nirvana. And I pictured a world filled with beautiful, peaceful, compassionate, loving people who knew that they could come to this space at any time. Then I realized what a tremendous gift this experience could be, what a stroke of insight this could be to how we live our lives."
Most scientists wouldn't dare go to the place where Dr. Jill took her audience. Even if their spirit soared free like a gliding whale, they wouldn't tell anyone about it. Dr. Jill realized that the story of her spiritual transformation had a lot more meaning than the story of a stroke. When her left hemisphere shut down, the ego part of her brain, she experienced a spiritual enlightenment. She no longer felt separate from the universe, but a part of it. She informed the audience and educated them about stroke. But if she had ended there, it would have made a good presentation, no doubt about it. But Dr. Jill took it one step further. She inspired and enlightened. The presentation went from good to remarkable. It took courage for Dr. Jill to stay in her lane, but it made all the difference. On an episode of ABC's Grey's Anatomy, the character of Dr. Callie Torres was preparing to give a TED Talk. Torres, an orthopedic surgeon, wasn't happy with the presentation she had prepared because it seemed boring compared to what she had seen on the TED stage. "Who wants to hear about cartilage?" she said. Due to the mayhem in the hospital, Callie missed her flight to TED, and she thought she was off the hook from giving a presentation. But at the last minute, her colleagues set up a remote satellite feed so that Callie could still deliver her presentation to a live audience. You can do that on a hit TV show. Callie sat down, visibly nervous, and she had a stack of note cards by her side. A doctor next to her said, "Just talk, Callie. Just be who you are." The doctor was instructing Callie to stay in her lane. Callie set the notes aside, took a deep breath, and said, "Hi, I'm Dr. Callie Torres, and I've had a pretty bad year. I was almost killed in a car wreck. An accident claimed the life of my best friend and father of my child. I'm an orthopedic surgeon by trade, and I work with cartilage. So I've spent a lot of time thinking about what holds us together when things fall apart. Although Grey's Anatomy is a fictional medical drama, it strikes me that when the writers of the show wanted to build a storyline around Ted, they realized the real magic of a memorable Ted presentation relies on the speaker setting aside her notes and speaking from the heart, letting her audience get a peek of her soul. Screenwriters are storytellers. They intuitively understand that the magic of Ted lies much deeper than the topic of a presentation. An inspiring speaker should move his or her listeners to think differently about their lives, careers, or businesses. A great speaker makes you want to be a better person. I chose the Richard Branson quote that opens this chapter because I think many speakers separate their true selves from the persona they show to others. Branson, whom I've met and I've interviewed more than once, doesn't put on an act. He's real. He's the same person on and off camera. Work is not separate from play, and play is not separate from work. It's all living, as Branson says. Many executives who I meet act and speak one way in the privacy of our conversation, and they sound completely different when they deliver a presentation. They act, look, and sound like two different people. They're not comfortable in their lane. They want to be somebody else. I can't tell you how many times I have met leaders who are passionate, humorous, enthusiastic, inspiring, only to discover that the minute they get on stage, they become soulless, stiff, boring, humorless. When I ask why, some respond, because I'm giving a presentation. Please keep this in mind. When you deliver a presentation, your goal should not be to deliver a presentation. It should be to inspire your audience, to move them, to encourage them to dream bigger. You cannot move people if they don't think you're real. You'll never convince your audience of anything if they don't trust, admire, and genuinely like you. TED note. Present your content to a different audience. One way I help clients to be more authentic when they are on is to have them present their content to a friend or spouse before they present it to the intended audience. They are more likely to let some of their real self come out when delivering the information to someone they have a relationship with than to a group of listeners they do not necessarily have that close connection with. In Sheryl Sandberg's talk, Why We Have Too Few Women Leaders, she says that women often underestimate their abilities in the workplace. I would argue the same lack of confidence affects many people, men and women, when it comes to their ability to give inspiring presentations. I've heard all the excuses. I'm shy. I'm not good at public speaking. I get nervous. Kids made fun of me in elementary school. My content is too complicated. All of these reasons, or a variation of them, may very well explain why you're not confident about giving a presentation, but in no way should they define your potential as a public speaker. I can assure you that many people, even great communicators, are really insecure about their public speaking ability. The internationally famous pastor, Joel Osteen, said he was scared to death before he gave his first sermon in October of 1999. 10 years later, he hit a home run, preaching to a sold-out crowd at the new Yankee Stadium. It took him 10 years and hundreds of sermons to master the craft of public speaking. But today, Joel Osteen is considered one of the more inspirational spiritual leaders in the world. Richard Branson said he nearly got sick when he was asked to speak early in his career. He said, "My mind went blank when I took the microphone. I mumbled incoherently for a bit before leaving the podium. It was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life, and my face glowed red as the Virgin logo." Branson committed himself to becoming a better speaker, and he did so by practicing relentlessly. Good speakers aren't just lucky or talented. They work hard. Branson also learned to be himself, to be authentic. Branson said, To be an impressive public speaker, you have to believe in what you're saying. And if you speak with conviction and you're passionate about your subject, your audience will be far more forgiving of your mistakes because they'll have faith that you're telling the truth. Prepare, then take your time and relax. Speak from the heart. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett was terrified of public speaking. He was so nervous, in fact, he would arrange and choose his college classes to avoid having to get up in front of people. He even enrolled in a public speaking course, and get this, he dropped out before it started. "I lost my nerve," he said. At the age of 21, Buffett started his career in the securities business in Omaha. And it was then he decided that in order to reach his full potential, he had to overcome his fear of public speaking. Buffett enrolled in a Dale Carnegie course with 30 other people who, like him, were terrified of getting up and saying our own names, he said. Buffett revealed this early insecurity in an interview for a website aimed at helping young women find their career success. The host asked Buffett, "What habits did you cultivate in your 20s and 30s that you see as a foundation of success?" Buffett answered, "You've got to be able to communicate in life, and it's enormously important. Schools, to some extent, underemphasize that. If you can't communicate and talk to other people and get your ideas across, you're giving up your potential." Very prestigious business schools often fall short when it comes to making communication skills a vital part of their programs. I've lost count at how many brilliant MBAs I've coached at large companies who often tell me, "We don't get this stuff in school, but it's so important for what we do." 10 note, put in time. Do you remember locking your car door when you left this morning? You may not remember it, but of course you did. You need to practice communicating your content every day, at every opportunity, so that the mechanics of giving a presentation do not monopolize your attention and focus. You don't want to be the dancer counting the steps out loud. Repetition frees your mind to tell your story in a way that is interesting, dynamic, and most importantly, authentic. I've worked with corporate leaders who are worth millions of dollars and run some of the world's largest brands, representing products and services that touch your life every day. Many have privately admitted to me that they are not confident about public speaking. My job is to bring out their confidence so that they can captivate their audiences. I do so by helping them identify their lane and why they're passionate about that lane. Then, once we craft, visualize, and rehearse the presentation, it's time to let go. And as Branson suggested, speak from the heart. This approach has never failed. Secret number 9, stay in your lane. The next time you deliver a presentation, you'll be compared to TED speakers. Your audience will be aware that there is a fresh, bold style of delivering information, a style that lifts their spirits, fills their souls, and inspires them to think differently about the world and their role in it. Today, people around the globe have viewed TED presentations more than 1 billion times online. Even the TED presenters themselves are getting better and better every year, an observation that TED curator Chris Anderson made at TED 2013. The TED style permeates much of our popular culture. When former President Bill Clinton appeared on Stephen Colbert's show on Comedy Central, Colbert suggested that Clinton combine his conference, the Clinton Global Initiative, with TED, and they call it Bill and Ted's Excellent Initiative. It got the biggest laugh of the interview, but the joke would have bombed had the audience not known about TED or the type of presentations it's known for. While the TED style is infusing our culture, each person must find his or her own passion about the topic in order to make an authentic connection with the audience. Above all, do not try to be Tony Robbins, Dr. Jill, Bono, Sheryl Sandberg, Richard Branson, or any of the other people you've been hearing about. They have carved out a lane for themselves, and they drive it exceptionally well. Stay in your lane. Hold the space. Be true to your authentic self. the best representation of yourself that you can possibly be. Author's note. If you're like most people, you're capable of so much more than you've imagined for your life. You have the capacity to move people, to inspire them, to provide hope to the despondent, direction to the lost. You have the ability to educate and electrify, inform and inspire, but only if you believe in your ability to do so. Don't let negative labels hold you back from achieving your destiny. Some people might tell you that you're not good enough, that you don't have what it takes to make a compelling business pitch or to deliver a great presentation. Often the worst labels are those we place on ourselves. I find that leaders who are nervous about speaking in public say the most awful things to themselves, words that they would never say to anybody else. I've heard people say, "I'm terrible at giving presentations. I got nervous once, and it ruined me. I'm a horrible public speaker. Nobody wants to listen to me. I'm boring." If these are the types of phrases that you repeat to yourself day after day, it's no wonder you get nervous. You can't control what other people say about you, but you can control how you frame those comments, and most certainly you can control the things that you tell yourself. Instead of replaying negative thoughts over and over again, reframe your thoughts. Replace those negative labels with words of encouragement, empowerment, and strength. Remember, your ideas are the currency of the 21st century. Your ideas will change the direction of your life and potentially change the world. Don't let anything, including negative labels, stand in your way. At the end of my interview with TED speaker Larry Smith, he said, "I wish you success with your book." You see, Smith does not say good luck, because luck has little to do with success. You don't need luck to be an inspiring speaker. You need examples, techniques, passion, and a lot of practice. You also need courage, the courage to follow your passion, articulate your ideas simply, and express what makes your heart sing. Let's continue this conversation. Follow me on Twitter at Carmine Gallo or visit my website, carminegallo.com. I'd like to hear from you. Wishing you success, Carmine.
We hope you've enjoyed Talk Like TED, a Macmillan audio production from St. Martin's Press. Text copyright 2014 by Carmine Gallo. Production copyright 2014 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.